Greetings and good evening, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is Saturday, August 18, 2018. The podcast has been silent for the last few weeks on account of out-of-town travels, but we do have several programs in the works to be presented over the next couple months. I would remind everyone to subscribe to the podcast feed on iTunes and also like us on Facebook. By doing this, you will be keeping yourself informed of new programs as they are published. Okay, consider this. Tennessee is a huge place, 95 counties, a couple thousand municipalities. Parks and recreation agencies are all around us, and they are a driving force in our economy. Federal parks and state parks play a major role in tourism. Local parks and recreation programs are a key ingredient in making our towns and cities healthy and livable places, and places that are attractive to industry. And of course, there are always changes in what the public demands of parks and recreation agencies. As our population grows, we will need more parks in different places and different kinds of recreation facilities. And as the demographics change and our population ages, we will need new and different types of programming. Yesterday, it was tennis. Today, it is walking along greenways and spinning in yoga classes. All of this requires study, public involvement, and planning. Yesterday, I had the pleasure to sit down with my old friend, Ann Marshall. She is the person with the major responsibility for developing the statewide plan for parks and recreation. The state is about to embark upon the process of their next comprehensive plan for parks and recreation. They do this each 5 or 10 years. Be warned, at times our conversation gets a little wonky, but you will be getting a good look at what goes on behind the scenes to keep our parks and recreation sector fresh and keep it moving forward. For sure, you will not find this sort of information anywhere else but the Mark Fraley Podcast. And so, I hope you will enjoy my conversation with Ann Marshall. Ann Marshall, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you, Mark.
I'm thrilled to have you here at the house.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I've always wanted to see your house and all your native plants and trees and everything.
It's fun to have you here.
Yeah, thank you.
I've known you for a long, long time. I've never had you at the house, so that's fun.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you.
So, Ann, I want to talk about planning for parks and recreation in Tennessee. But before that, I want my audience to learn a little bit about who you are and what you do. What is your current job and what are you doing?
Sure. Currently, I am the senior advisor to the deputy commissioner over parks and conservation. So I'm the senior advisor to Brock Hill, who is currently our deputy commissioner over the Bureau. And the Parks and Conservation Bureau includes state parks, Division of Natural Areas, Division of Archaeology, the Division of Recreation Services, and then other support divisions such as marketing and facilities and maintenance, GIS, and those types of support divisions.
And GIS, Geographic Information Systems. Okay. And your role is as an advisor to Brock. Do you have actually specific line responsibilities that you're responsible for?
Mainly I'm responsible to Brock, right. But as serving in this position, it's also kind of a chief of staff type responsibility. So besides being Brock's senior advisor and helping him through different operational challenges and programs, I also work with each of the directors of the divisions and kind of enable them to do their jobs a little bit better. Anything I can do that can enable them to do their jobs a little bit better and meet their goals throughout the year, that's what I try to do.
Got you. So Ann, how did you come into that line of work? I know, I think maybe the first time I met you, Ann, was when you were a student at UT and got yourself involved in the Recreation and Parks Association.
Wow, you are going way back, Mark.
So tell us about how you advanced in your career.
Yeah, I'm one of the few a few left in my class that actually stayed in the Parks and Recreation field. I graduated from the University of Tennessee with a degree in recreation administration is what it was called at the time. Got involved in TRPA really early on, the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association. And basically because I grew up in a community recreation program in Tullahoma,
I knew
that that's sort of what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to do something in that area, but I didn't realize until I went to school for it all the different areas of recreation there were that you could go into. So went through my curriculum and graduated in 83. Prior to that, I did two practicums or internships with Tennessee State Parks and worked at Fall Creek Falls two summers. And then when I graduated, I went straight into municipal recreation. So I was the director of the Parks and Recreation Department in Jonesboro, Tennessee for almost 3 years.
So I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, I followed Kitty Frazier.
Right after Kitty. Kitty took the job in Kingsport.
That's right.
I'd forgotten that
that's
you were
right.
there. Okay.
So from there, just because when I was younger, I wanted to work in all these different areas of recreation. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. I just wanted to experience all these different different areas. And so I had an opportunity to be the executive director of a teen center in Kingsport. So the Rascals Teen Center, that was a nonprofit, independent facility and operation. I was hired as their executive director. And it was like a full-time recreation center for kids, basically. I was only there about 3 years there because I got tired of working weekends all the time. And then I left there though because the opportunity opened up with the state. Joyce Hoyle, who was over the PARTAS, the Parks and Recreation Technical Advisory Service at the time, had a job opening, and I had met Joyce through TRPA, and she encouraged me to apply for it, and so I was able to enter into a position that I thought was going to be really challenging, and it was. I learned so much about the field of parks and recreation as I was continuing to grow in the profession, but then also getting to work with all the cities and counties across the state.
You were one of the PARTAS consultants.
Yes.
And at the time that you came in, were you the only one, you and Joyce, or was there someone else?
Yes. For a while, it was just the two of us.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, covering the entire state.
Yeah, and of course that... For my listeners, I'd had that job before Joyce did years ago.
You did.
Traveling 95 counties and talking to all the mayors, it was really more fun than a barrel of monkeys.
Yeah, really. To this day, I can still say I know somebody in every county in
the
state, and not too many people could do
exactly.
So
exactly.
Yeah.
So then I believe you went on to work as executive director for TRPA for a while.
That's correct.
Yeah.
About 5 years later. That position came open. Kathleen Williams, who had been the longtime executive director there, was moving on to start her own nonprofit with Parks and Greenways. And so, again, because I had worked for a nonprofit before and because TRPA was my professional association, I loved it, was very involved with it. I was very interested in leading that association for a while. So I did that for about 5 years. But during this whole time, I was living in the Tri-Cities because my husband was the park manager at Warriors Path, and I was working in Nashville. So we had this commuting thing going on, and I was here all week, up there all weekend. So it came a time where I just had to take about a year off. And I took a year off, went back to the Tri-Cities, and then Joyce Hoyle came calling again and hired me back in 2001 with the promise that I could work a region. That's when... While I was gone during those 5 years, they regionalized the PARTAS program, planning, grants, technical assistance, and really, you know, that kind of evolved during the time that I was gone. And so there were people in each region of the state, and it had grown to the point where we were able to provide the services that, you know, that we thought we should always be able to provide, that we weren't having to put people on hold, you know, every time they called to do something.
Gotcha.
So we had enough people to not only manage and administer the grants programs, but to also provide the planning and technical assistance that we needed to provide when they called.
Right. So then you got bumped upstairs. You're working at a highly responsible job right now.
Yes. I mean, as state government goes and different people are coming in and out as commissioner, and, you know, when Jim Fike was hired as the deputy commissioner of the department, I'd worked with Jim for many years in metro when he was with Metro and I was with TRPA. He had asked if I would come in and lead a kind of a mega division at the time, because we were taking two divisions and putting them together after we had two retirements. Charlie Tate, who had headed up the Natural Resources Division with State Parks for a long time, and Reggie Reeves, who was the director of the State Natural Areas Division. And at the time, because the state was going through a hiring freeze, Commissioner Fike kind of joined those two departments or two divisions together and asked if I would be the director for that group. So I came in and kind of reorganized that group, restructured it a bit. So we had natural areas and program services and natural and cultural resource management sort of all together in one group.
So Ann, parks just don't happen. Somebody has to sit down on with a pad of paper and have a dream of what's going to happen. Whether that be a local park or a state park or even a national park, somebody has got to do the planning.
Well, that's true. And parks do kind of happen in a variety of different ways. You know, they can be designated as open space areas. You know, if you have a land use plan or some type of a plan that looks and assesses a community, for example, you know, you want to have a vibrant quality of life going on. You want to have opportunities for people to stay healthy and be active and to recreate, and a place where you can have programs and facilities. And so a lot of times it is thought out and you kind of look at where those best places would be. But then sometimes it just makes sense if you look at your natural resources and look where those are, your lakes, your streams, your rivers, your mountains, you know, the big blocks of land, the big chunks of land that need to be protected and preserved, then that makes sense for the bigger parks like the national parks and the state parks.
Sure.
But yes, you're right. I mean, in order to protect and preserve those for future generations and to provide those quality recreation opportunities, you sort of have to look at, you know, where you've been and assess where you are, where do you want to go, and the plan is the roadmap to get there. You've got to have something that connects all the dots.
So there is this thing called the State Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan. I know that is an idea or an entity that comes from the Land and Water Conservation Fund Act.
Correct.
That was passed in 65. Each of the states is required to do these now every 5 years?
Every 5 years. Okay. They're considering it changing it to a 10-year requirement, okay, but they have not done so yet. Right. It's still on a 5-year cycle.
And the last one that you completed was when?
We did our first 10-year plan. We were actually the first state to be allowed to do a 10-year plan because we wanted to have something a little bit more visionary and something that lasted a longer period of time. National Park Service approved that plan, but required that we also put in the 5-year components for outdoor recreation, okay, which the Land and Water Conservation Fund requires. Okay. They look at the outdoor recreation components. So even though we look at indoor recreation and all types of recreation in our plan now, it really is comprehensive.
Okay.
We're still required to do the 5-year SCORP component. So we updated the 2020 plan in 2015. We have a shorter update that looks at what was accomplished and what is still relevant in the next 5 years through 2020. But we're getting ready to launch the process for the next 10-year plan.
You know, it's interesting. We talk about the State Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan, but to do a truly comprehensive plan for recreation services and parks in Tennessee involves a lot more than just outdoor recreation.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, we have YMCAs, we have churches,
right,
that all provide recreation services, schools.
Yes.
I think several of us had to beat some of the powers that be over the head for quite a long time to get them to own up to that.
Right. Right.
Finally, they're have grasped that concept.
I think so too. I mean, I think, you know, partnerships, collaboration, cooperation, you know, I know you were around when the school park agreements were really big, and
exactly,
it just made sense to work together when you have facilities that are sitting there unused during the summer and after school and on weekends. It makes sense for Parks and Recreation programs in the community to be able to use those facilities.
I had to laugh, and I pulled up the most recent plan online and read that over here in the last couple of days, and it's really a far cry from the plans that we did in 78 and 83. I guess we did plans around those times. Is this available online for our listeners to?
It is. Both plans are available online. Okay. The original 2020 plan and then the 2015 update.
Okay.
And it's on the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation, the TN.gov website format.
Okay.
But it's actually on the Recreation Services webpage.
Okay.
If you Google it, it'll come up automatically. Gotcha. And take you there. But if you're on the TDEC website, then go to Recreation Educational Services, and all of the planning documents are listed there.
I'd really like to encourage our listeners to dial that up and save it as a PDF document. It's 64 pages long. It's not difficult reading by any measure, and you'll sort of get an idea of what the larger picture is in recreation planning. It's a far cry from what we were doing back in the early days. You know, I think it's fun, and, you know, the Park Service, the national government, and Department of Interior required each of the states to do this, but the Park Service nor the states had any idea how to do this.
Right.
when we got
right.
started.
Right.
You may remember all of the supply and demand analysis that was done, where we would go out and inventory, you know, how many tennis courts exist in Sevierville, Tennessee, kind of
right.
counting picnic tables.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
So as to have a supply.
Right.
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 And then sort of having this magic idea, well, how many recreation opportunities will a tennis court provide in a year?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Those sorts of ideas have been discarded.
Well, back then it was basically the main reason that the National Park Service through the Department of the Interior made the states do those, required that the states do these plans, was because if they're going to give the states an allocation of that Land and Water Conservation Fund dollars to spend out into local grants or state park projects, they wanted to make sure that we were spending those dollars on the priorities of the state. You know, what were the state's recreation priorities? So in order to do that, they came up with this open project selection process, you know, which was the criteria that all the states had to use. And each state got to develop their own, even right. though they guided us as to what that selection process needed to include. But they felt like if we weren't doing the supply and demand studies and really doing the inventories, that it was hard for us to deduct or assess what those needs would be unless we did a little bit of preliminary work. So, but because the plan now is more comprehensive, well, the main reason is in the early 1990s, we got a state grant program, through the real estate transfer tax. We now have state dollars to add with those local dollars through land and water to fund land acquisition, trail development, indoor and outdoor community centers and recreation playgrounds, you know, all types of things. It's much more comprehensive. So we have indoor and outdoor now.
Right.
And that's when our planning process really changed.
I got you. So are we still out there counting picnic tables?
No, not as much.
Okay.
We do still take an inventory, but it's not only facilities.
All right.
We look at, you know, land resources. We look at programming resources. We look at partnerships now. I mean, the last recreation plan is, as you know from reviewing it, we've got quality growth. There's a chapter on quality growth where we've worked with a lot of County Services Association and TML and Department of Economic and Community Development to kind of look at how communities and counties can work together and their parks and recreation programs can work together. And you know, we're looking at the waters of the state and how, you know, we can plan using our watersheds a little bit more effectively and efficiently across the state. So it really has grown to include a lot more departments in the state, a lot more state departments, so it's more interdepartmental. Even within TDEC, we're the Department of Environment and Conservation, so we also have the environment side of our department, which is a lot of regulatory divisions like air pollution, solid hazardous waste, water resources, those types of things. But we do cross over a lot with, you know, the health of our waterways and the health of our water, air, land, and water. So, the planning process itself has become more comprehensive, but the people involved in it have really grown quite a bit too. If you'll remember, you know, we've always had a track committee, the Tennessee Recreation Advisory Committee,
right,
that sort of guides that,
right,
that document and that whole planning process. And that used to be, I think it went maybe from 12 to 15 people up to 35 people the last plan we did. So we're definitely involving more disciplines and more.
All right, so as you now are about to embark on your next plan, the track committee is going to be reconstituted?
It'll be reappointed. Okay. We're working on that right now.
Okay.
It'll be appointed by Deputy Commissioner Hill.
Okay.
And they will begin meeting sometime late this fall once appointed, because we're about to embark on the next 10-year plan, outdoor recreation plan, or Tennessee State Recreation Plan, as we call it now. So that's getting ready to be, we're gearing up for that. And part of the process will be the track committee will help lay out the priorities. They'll help assess statewide what they feel needs to be in this plan. They'll look at the last plan, what was accomplished, what's still relevant, what are the new issues that have come up, and the new initiatives or strategies that we might want to look at. And then we'll put together an RFP that'll go out to select a firm to do that.
A request for proposals.
Exactly. Yes.
So the state intends to basically hire a consultant to do the,
yes,
main part of this.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So
we do not have a planner on staff right now, Mark.
Okay.
So that's one of the main reasons. We try to do what we can in-house with the staff that we have, but the days of having recreation resource planners are gone, at least for us right now. We hope maybe in the future we can get a planning position back, but we don't have that right now. So it makes sense for us to support the effort of an outside consultant.
I presume that part of that process will be then to have public meetings or public input, or will there be household surveys done or anything of that nature, do we know?
We're not sure about the survey format yet. We did a telephone survey the last time,
okay,
and I think those are kind of going by the wayside.
Okay,
I think the more I've heard about that recently, a lot of states are going away from the telephone survey. But in our last 10-year plan, the 2020 plan, the consultant that we hired subcontracted with the University of Tennessee,
okay,
with Mark Fly and his Human Dimensions Lab, and they did the random sample telephone survey across Tennessee. So it did survey Tennessee residents.
Asking them what?
Basically, why, you know, what do they want in recreation in the state? What do they participate in now? What would they like to see? And then it went through different activities depending on what their answers were to some of the initial questions. Then they went a little bit deeper to find out how many times a week do they participate in a community recreation program, or how often do they visit our Tennessee state parks, and why do they come to a state park? And so the study he did was twofold. We had the survey sample that was general recreation across the state, and then he did a piece for economic development of our state park system, which we hope we can do that again, because I feel like that
was
very beneficial.
Exactly?
It's basically taking a methodology to look at the economic impact of Tennessee state parks in our state, you know, the jobs that it provides.
That's separate and apart from the household survey.
Yes.
Okay. I was trying to meld the two together.
Yes.
Okay.
So he did both of those. And I don't know, you know, we go to a conference every year that's called the Society of Outdoor Recreation Professionals, and it includes the people from all across the country, all the states that do planning and provide recreation planning and develop their SCORPs in their state. And we just recently came back from one that was held in April, and for the most part, the states are getting away from the phone surveys and doing more focus groups.
Okay.
actually, instead of doing a survey, which you could do a Survey Monkey, which those things are really big right now. But they're encouraging focus groups and actual public meetings, which for a while I thought they were kind of passé. People weren't attending or showing up to those unless there was something controversial going on. And it was really hard to get a good, you know, a good needs assessment from something like that. But now what we're hearing and what we're seeing from other processes in Tennessee, too, is that, you know, if you put some effort into it, you could really get some good focus groups across the state with people that are very interested in what's going on. And then after that, we might supplement with some type of a survey, random sample survey, but it won't be a phone survey.
So focus groups, that would be a fun thing to witness. It really would.
Yes. Yeah. And that'll be part of our RFP or our contract that'll go out. Whoever we hire will be responsible for helping us. We'll support them in setting those up. But then there'll also be regular public meetings, regional public meetings, once the plan is drafted. We will do at least 3, maybe 4 in the grand divisions of the state, where the public will have an opportunity to come comment on the draft plan. And then we'll also have it online with an online comment form for those that want to contribute comments online and input online.
If a person's listening and wants to be involved or at least be kept up to date on what's happening in this planning process, is there a place to call or to get yourself on a list to get mailers about this? Where would they call?
Yeah, we haven't thought about that, but I think that's a great idea. Even if they don't, if they don't find themselves as a member of the track committee, they could certainly be on the focus groups, and we definitely want people that are interested and have something to say.
Well, or at least want to go to a public meeting.
Yes. Yeah. So they can email me directly at ann.marshall@tn.gov. And just send me a quick email with your information, and we'll go ahead and add you to the list and keep you apprised of all the announcements and the meetings that are going on. But you've just given me a good idea. I think it would be a great idea to just keep everybody informed that's interested in planning and recreation in general with some type of a newsletter.
Something like that, we'd have to generate a letter and mail it out to 1,000 points, and it's so easy now to do it with email. Social media type stuff.
Sure.
So you all, you know, this is interesting, Ann, because, you know, we're about to change governors. Our current governor is term limited.
Yes.
So we have an election coming up in a couple months. So we're going to have a new governor.
We
don't know of which person will be. So we're doing all this stuff at the time of this change of administration. Is that going to have an impact on this? Or, I mean, obviously you're required to do this planning process, no matter who the governor is.
Right. Well, that's the other good thing about planning, Mark, is that it does give stability to what's going on in the state with regards to recreation and operations of park systems and community, city, county parks, how we administer grant programs, all of that. It's kind of been used as an educational process for new governors coming in and any new commissioners.
Gotcha.
So we can kind of put that in front of them and say, here's why we do what we do. And, you know, it's pretty defensible when you look at the planning process. Not only is it required, but it also helps us be able to defend why we allocate money to certain types of projects.
Right.
Because we've gone across the state, we've gone through the system, the methodologies, we've talked to people. And when we give out that grant money, it meets all those priorities that we've set.
Right.
So,
you know, and looking at the most recent plan, I found it interesting. The plan talks about the 3 new parks that have been brought into the system during that period of time, and how those parks actually addressed the identified needs that had been identified in the plans previously.
Yes.
Those parks, if I can remember their names, as the Seven Islands State Birding Park in Knoxville area, and then Upper East Tennessee is the Rocky Fork. And what is the third
one?
Well,
there were only two state parks.
Okay.
We've had a lot of natural areas added to the system.
Okay, I was thinking 3, but it was 2. Okay.
Well, yeah. I take that back. You are right. It's three because Cummins Falls was the first.
Cummins Falls was the third.
We did Cummins Falls first in the first park, and then announced Rocky Fork.
Right.
It didn't actually become a state park though until after Seven Islands did.
Right.
So Seven Islands was actually the 56th, but we had announced Rocky Fork before that, and we're still developing plans for Rocky Fork, so it's still kind of a wilderness area at the time.
That's one I have not been to. I've
great
been,
trails, though, and just a beautiful, beautiful area in
Unicoi
County.
Which I recommend to anybody that is listening to go and see. It's a remarkable place. And Seven Islands, although it's not a fancy place. It's
no.
just a bunch of fields, basically.
Because it was a refuge, basically a birding refuge.
But it is quite nice.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's absolutely beautiful. We acquired that one through Knox County. Took that over from Knox County. But the Legacy Park Foundation, which had a lot to do with that as well, is still
which
very
is
much involved.
County,
it's a
right.
local
yeah.
Knox County
right.
group. And they have a wonderful friends group at that park. They're doing a fantastic job with helping with the trail development there and the visitor center presence. And we've got TDOT there building a bridge that's
right.
going across from the property, from the park boundary.
Yeah, now this property, this park is on the French Broad River.
French Broad River.
And at a beautiful, beautiful stretch of that river.
It is.
And
it is.
High banks on one side, and I think the park actually has some property on the other side of the river and some of the islands in the river.
Right.
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 Which really are only accessible by canoe or something
yes.
like that.
Yes.
Exactly. So what's in the future of state parks planning?
Well, right now, what we are doing in state parks planning, every park has their own business and management plan, and we are embarking on the 5-year mark for those. Those are updated every 5 years as well. So each park kind of has their own story to tell. We want to make sure that through interpretive programming, each park's doing what they need to do as far as that goes. But we also look at their operations, revenue generation, customer service, staffing. What those needs might be in the future, facilities and maintenance. You know, capital projects have been huge in this administration.
Right.
Makes it more important for us to have a good management plan on, you know, what we have, how we manage it, and then what the future holds. What do we need at this particular site in the next 5 years or next 5 to 10 years?
Do you, in your own mind, have an idea of a new state park that needs to happen anywhere? I'm putting you on the spot here. Sorry about that.
No, actually, we've looked at a lot of different areas because sometimes, like I said earlier, those come to us in a lot of different
sure,
ways.
Sure.
We've had requests to go look at different areas that might potentially become state parks in the future, but that's the governor's prerogative to always name those or to decide, you know, what we might be interested in. And so yeah, there are so many beautiful areas across Tennessee. I'm every day, every week I'm out there traveling, I see places that I didn't know existed in Tennessee. And that's the great part about what I do and what our job entails. That we still have a lot of places out there that need to be protected.
Well, let's talk a little bit about local park and recreation.
Okay.
I was reading in your most recent plan, talking about the growth that was happening in Fayette County, and that's the suburbs of Memphis.
Memphis, Shelby County, right.
Some of the growth that's going on in Washington County, which is, I guess, just adjacent to Johnson City.
Right, right.
And the plan was talking about the need for expanded recreational delivery systems in those areas. Tell me more about that. What's happening there?
Well, those are areas where there is a lot of growth, either from new industry coming in, you know, just from the resources that are there, and just from having a quality of life that, you know, even this Nashville area we've seen in the last 5 years is continuing to just boom, bust at the seams. Williamson County, Rutherford County, Tri-Cities because it's so close, I think, to Western North Carolina. People are realizing just the gem of natural resources, the treasures that are up there. It's just phenomenal. So, you know, what we look at is if we've got areas that are unserved by Parks and Recreation Delivery System, we have one small program called the TRIP Grant. It's the Tennessee Recreation Initiative Program that supplies grant dollars to communities that want to start their first Parks and Recreation Department and hire their first director. That's been reasonably successful. We've had some counties or some cities that haven't followed through totally with that program once they got started. Didn't realize the commitment that it was going to take, because the first year we fund it all. The second year they have to match it. Right. And the third year they have to take it over on their own completely.
So they get a grant for a certain amount of money to actually go out and hire a professional person.
Set up their office. And some communities have hired a director and a programmer so that they can start planning some recreation programs for their residents. And some, depending on the location, some hire a director and a maintenance person.
Gotcha.
So it depends on the facilities they might already have. So, like I said, in some communities, it's the volunteers that do it all. And some, we have staff.
You've had some successes along those lines and some not so successes.
Some that haven't quite
worked
out.
Tell us about a success story.
Oh, let's see. I would say, you know, Unicoi County, where Rocky Fork is, has been one of those. Irwin, Tennessee. That one ended up being fairly successful years ago. Irwin, the city of Irwin. Okay. And then just recently, probably in the last, I might get this wrong, but I want to say it's within the last 3 years, that the town of Unicoi in Unicoi County also received one of these grants. So we've had some pretty good success there. Eastern Middle Tennessee, we seem to have had the most successes, although West Tennessee, it has our largest number of counties that are unserved by Parks and Recreation Department. But we have found that those are usually the counties that don't have the resources sometimes to match the grant. So we have to provide them technical assistance and work with them to get them ready for that and to kind of help them along the way.
I noticed that your most recent plan that you published back in 2015 talks about the need for perhaps, and I suspect this is what you're talking about, you have such areas that are so rural that you may have three counties next to each other in total might have 30,000 people.
That's right.
And that may be kind of a threshold number where they can afford to pay for a full-time park and recreation director. So have we had any luck in any
county
systems?
We actually have encouraged that, but that just hasn't happened yet. You know, we do have some joint systems in the state, Maryville, Alcoa, Blount County, Brownsville, Haywood County.
Okay.
So there have been some joint systems that have been fairly successful and have had some longevity, but we thought if we could, you know, maybe have some type of authority approach, or like a recreation authority or some kind of a regional system approach, that would be the most beneficial for some of these areas, these rural areas in West Tennessee. But so far we've not been successful with those.
You know, it's an interesting thing. There's a connection between what happens in state park planning and what happens or fails to happen in city and county park planning.
Yes. Yes.
As you well know, the state is called upon to do a lot of things. Build a swimming pool seems to be the one that comes to mind.
Yeah, we still struggle with that. I mean, it's been one of those things that we assess. What should the city and the county provide? What should that municipal system provide? And what should state parks provide? And we have to keep going back to our mission of preserving and protecting our natural and cultural resources first and foremost. But I tell you what, one thing that's really helped with that is 2 years ago, Deputy Commissioner Hill threw out this initiative and just said, we want every park manager at every one of our state parks to meet with your city county leaders, and your Convention and Visitors Bureau people, Chamber of Commerce folks, and enter into an MOU or resolution that's mutually beneficial.
MOU, Memorandum of Understanding.
Okay. Memorandum of Understanding And basically what that entailed, every park system has one now with their local government where that park is located. And it basically just says, you know, that we will continue to support each other, partner with each other, plan together, you know, look at tourism opportunities, economic development opportunities, that, you know, we're in this together and we need to work together. And yeah, that's been successful. It's been great.
That is a wonderful thought, yeah. A wonderful idea. It's so interesting that Commissioner Hill would be the one to propose that. This goes before his time. I know he is former county executive at
Cumberland
County.
Right. He was a county mayor for 16 years before coming to TDEC.
Exactly. Yes. And his predecessor there in Cumberland County, I don't remember her name, but we had an issue with some local developer who had built a go-kart racetrack right next to the campground at the Cumberland Mountain State Park. Do you remember this?
I don't remember that.
Well, thankfully, the go-kart racetrack business didn't survive but a summer or two.
Oh, thank goodness.
But it was truly a nuisance.
Yes. Yes,
and
I can see why.
I called the executive, county executive, now the county mayor, on the phone and asked her about it. And she says, well, that's a business too. And she had no desire to talk with me about what they might do to kind of mitigate that. But there's opportunities like that presents for people to talk to one another.
Yes, you know? Absolutely. Absolutely.
And Cumberland County at the time did not have a park and recreation department. I don't know whether they do now.
No, as a matter of fact, the way I met Brock Hill was when he was county mayor.
Gotcha.
And I was a park task consultant.
Okay.
In 92, he called and talked to Joyce about getting a system organized there and getting their board organized. And I was the one that got to go and do their strategic planning and help them organize their first Parks and Recreation Advisory Board. So that's when I met Brock. And they do not have a county director right now, but they do have a board and have people working for Parks and Recreation with the city. The city of Crossville,
right,
has a Parks and Recreation director.
Gotcha.
So
at the time that I was involved, they did not. And this is why we have a swimming pool at Cumberland Mountain State Park. It's basically to serve the local needs there.
Yeah.
I should qualify that somewhat, because there was a pig farmer doing his business up on the watershed of the little swimming lake that we had at Cumberland Mountain that polluted the lake to such a degree that there was a need for a swimming pool there.
Okay.
As well.
I gotcha.
So
yeah.
That swimming beach, it became a touch-and-go situation at times.
Sure. Okay. Okay. I can see that.
But anyway, the point is that when local recreation needs are not satisfied by local government, they turn to state government.
Sometimes they do. Yeah. Sometimes, a legislator will call and say, my constituents need this or want this. What can we do? You know, a lot of times they're not very, you know, they're not demanding about something, but they want us to look at it and say, can we do this? Because that's where they have some control, too, in making some things happen or getting some things funded.
Right.
But if we really think that it is a local responsibility and a municipal responsibility, then we'll be very honest with them and say, this is what needs to happen. We have grant programs that will fund these facilities, and we encourage your city, your county, to apply for the local Parks and Recreation Fund. So,
and the good thing too is that when you all make grants to cities and counties, you're also looking at their capacity to handle a facility.
Correct.
And now,
correct.
A grant for a basketball court is easy to make, because there's not much maintenance involved in that.
Right, right.
But a grant for a swimming pool
is
a long, hard swallow, because it takes some expertise to know how to run a swimming pool.
Yeah, really any facility, major, small, medium size, you know, we want to see your planning process and how did you determine that that was a priority in your community. So through public meetings, through surveys, through, again, the inventory of what they have or what they don't have. And we've realized that, again, going back to the rural communities and the areas that don't have the organized Parks and Recreation Services, Last year, Recreation Educational Services launched this community planning grant program. It's part of the LPRF fund, and they funded, I think we had enough for 20 planning grants, and I think we only funded 17. Those were the applications that we got. But so all of the PARTAS staff, April Johnson, George Brogdon, Gerald, we now have Jamison Slager and Daniel Jackson with our group. We're fully staffed in the PARTAS program for first time
These
in a long time.
Do nothing but deal with local governments,
so
essentially.
That's exactly right. So they've gone in and really worked with each of these local areas to hire a consultant and to have their first Parks and Recreation Master Plan. So now they're ready to apply for funding to build their park system.
Okay, so those grants were made, and are those plans being finished up now?
They're being finished up right now. And so we thought it might be an every year thing, but it looks like it's going to be an every other year thing, as far as the timing, to make sure that the plans get finished and we can handle the technical assistance part of it.
So just out of curiosity, what's the largest town that got a grant like that and the smallest?
Oh gosh.
Can you say? Was it a wide range of towns?
It was a pretty wide range. There were quite a few in West Tennessee. Okay. Again, we had a lot of the applications that came in from West, and the smaller communities along the Kentucky-Tennessee line and Alabama-Tennessee border, you know, some of the smaller towns and cities there. I wish I had the list in front of me. I could be more specific, but...
It was
a diverse list.
It would be fun to see that list and actually look at some of those plans.
What they have come up with. I think you would find it very interesting to see, because they're not cookie cutter plans. That was sort of what we were running into with some of these communities that weren't really ready. They were just copying somebody else's plan for the most part, or putting in a couple of pages on what they thought was a plan. But basically, it was just a list of needs. And so this has been an education process for them on what planning really is, what a Parks and Recreation Master Plan entails. It's not just a list, but it's actual implementation, action plans. It's, you know, looking at things you can do short term, where you need to be in 5 years. It's looking at conceptual site plans as well as programmatic issues.
Are they planning for just facilities or also... How are we going to do aerobics classes?
Exactly. Everything. Right. Everything. Right. I don't know. You probably remember when, I think his name was Larry Jennings. Was the Parks and Recreation Director in Williamson County, or Franklin, and they had no facilities. It was early on. He was probably the first director. I'm not sure on that. But he ended up using all the facilities in town to do the Parks and Recreation program. Banks, churches.
There was, at that time, created a Franklin / Williamson County Park and Recreation Agency. It was actually a cooperative department.
Yes.
And as you said, Larry got involved in that situation with virtually no park facilities.
Yes.
No community centers.
Right.
So
right.
He would use the county library meeting room.
Yes.
For dance class. He would use the schools of all the for volleyball classes. And he had all kinds of activities all over that county.
He did. He put out a newspaper, like a program newspaper, that showed where everything was. It was a full schedule.
Right.
And we've used that as a model across the state for a long time and still do. That's one of the things we still encourage communities to look at, is to inventory your resources and see what you do have, because a lot of times there's facilities there that are screaming to be used.
And exactly. And some of the towns that have been very, very successful, and I pick Sevierville as an example, mm-hmm. They were successful in doing recreation programming before. They demonstrated that ability to do that before they built their community center.
Right.
They have one of the most spectacular community centers in for any town in Tennessee.
They really do.
But
they really do.
Before the city government would decide to build that and invest the several million dollars that was involved in that, they demonstrated their capacity to do, and the city's desire, the people's desire to participate in these programs.
That's right.
So, So planning for recreation is not just about the facilities, it's really about the programming aspects as well.
That's right. Even those communities, those residents, outlets for healthy, active living and just to be social and, you know, get people together. And even if it's, you know, even if it's just sports teams, a lot of community, smaller communities get started with sports leagues. You know, you go to a small community and they say, yes, we have recreation, we have baseball and softball or baseball and basketball. So that's where a lot of these communities actually start, because that's, you know, that's the low-hanging fruit. That's what everybody, you know, can do to start with. But there are a lot of other things that can kind of branch out, you know, from that.
You know, it's hobbies that people have and they do in their basement.
Yes. Right? Yes.
Whether it's basket weaving or you name the hobby. My hobby is genealogy. I like to do family history research.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, often people are like, well, how can a public park and recreation department have a role to play in that? Well, they can. Even if it's just to have a hobby fair,
right,
where everybody get together and,
right,
and you know, you make model airplanes and this other person does some sort of craft activity,
right,
they get together.
Yeah.
So anyway, and what do you, we're about to run out of time.
Okay.
Going back to the large plan for the state of Tennessee, is there an issue or two that you anticipate going to be on the top of the issues list?
That's a very good question, Mark. You know, I would say that part of our part of this administration and the research that we've done and the programs that we've offered, the planning that we've done in parks, you know, a lot of it still goes back to collaboration and partnerships. I think we've done a lot in that area, but I think we can do so much more. And I think we're probably going to see a melding of a lot of different, you know, areas and disciplines. Again, I think tourism, economic and community development, just because of the impact that the outdoor recreation industry has on recreation in Tennessee and nationwide now. Outdoor recreation specifically, I think, is going to be really key in how we're providing outdoor recreation facilities like mountain biking areas, for example. Maybe looking at some non-traditional type, you know, recreation offerings and facilities. But I think we're going to be bringing a lot more people to the table this time. And I don't know, there's probably issues that I'm not even thinking of that these professionals and that these citizens will bring up that we're not real sure what direction we're going to head in. But we know one thing is that we'll always use our mission as a driver, you know, to preserve and protect in perpetuity unique examples of natural cultural resources, looking at our historic resources, and then trying to provide as many diverse recreation opportunities to our citizens as possible. So,
well, Anne, that sounds like a wonderful way to wrap it up. Thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you, Mark. This has been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed talking to you. Thanks.
We're going to have you back again here in the next few years.
Hey, would love it. Love it. Thank you.